All right, so I think that's it for today. We got a small crew, guys. Welcome. It's two things I'm going to cover today. First, welcome anybody who's new. I think we've got Jay Foster here, and we've got somebody else on. Sean, I think Sean, you're a new one as well. Welcome, guys. Anyone else is their first week? I think everybody else I've seen here before. Scott, I know you've been on our. Scott's an OG. Scott's one of the original MI coaching clients. Welcome back, man. It's so great to see you. So great to have you back. So two things I want to cover today. First, an incredible transformation that we've got in our community. And it brings up this conversation around how we do what we do. And I thought I would share that with you guys, because we often get these people who say, like, oh, it's not possible what you guys do. Yeah, we do it repeatedly, consistently, and predictably. Put on way more muscle than most people think they can. It's the first thing I want to talk about. So I'll tell you a little bit about the process. Second thing I want to talk about is cold exposure and sauna exposure. So cold and hot thermogenesis. So we'll talk a little about that. So first, I'll get some more stragglers in here. I'm going to mute everyone's connection. Yeah, and Nick, welcome. I see Nick. I saw him on Saturday. Got some more people still coming. Slow folks. All right, hopefully that's it. All right, guys, welcome. So the topic for today, first, we're going to talk about muscle building and how we are here at Muscle Intelligence are consistently, repeatedly, and predictably able to do a lot more than people expect. I'll give you guys a framework. And it's just simply what I call the missing link. And you guys will get this, and I'll give you a framework on that. And then I'll talk a little bit about cold exposure and saunas and how you can make the most of that and how you should leverage it. And ultimately, if it's beneficial for you. So muscle building. One of the things we're doing, what seems like remarkably consistently team-wide, right? It's not just Ben, it's not just Gavin, it's not just Steve, it's not just Michael, it's everybody, is consistently putting on a very large amount of muscle in a short amount of time. So I got a testimonial that came through today. Alex Given, is Alex on here? No. Damn, Alex, I was going to feature you on the call today, man. Oh, Steve knows about Alex. Steve, you want to talk a little bit about Alex? What happened there?
Yeah, Alex came in, you know, a guy not unlike anybody else in our program. You know, he's has his own fair share of stresses in life. He works probably 60 hours a week. He's a workhorse. And what was interesting, too, is he wasn't new. Like, he'd been lifting for years. And his goal was just to put on a lot of mass. And I was like, this is great. I love it. So it was a lot of just like, you know, what we've talked about and what we preach, which is fixing movement quality and then looking for the low hanging fruit and leveraging that consistently. And he was just such a, you mentioned beginner's mindset. He was just so that with everything he did. And he just, yeah, he's killed it. He's done great. I think he started originally at like 182 pounds. And he I had a call from today. He was 206.
Yeah. So when he came on, his goal was 20 pounds of muscle, you said, right?
He just wanted to break 200. Mm. And now he realizes like, that was easy. Let's do 220.
Yeah. And how many months has that been?
That was end of June.
Yeah. So July, August, September, just over 3 months, 20 pounds, over 20 pounds, 24 pounds. And like, how has his body fat gone up a little bit or down or same?
Maybe a percent or two, but honestly, just looks like he might be holding some water just from the extra carbs he's eating, because he's eating like so much more. And that's also cool, because he also mentioned when he first started, anytime he'd eat any food, he'd be instantly bloated. And he would always talk about how things were just not feeling good. He'd have, you know, problems downstairs and digestion. His sleep would go to crap when he tried to eat more. But and you can also see it's hypertrophy too, because he's actually stronger and he's moving properly in these positions. He's more stable, doesn't have any knee pain. Like, you can go on. It's just all the stuff that follows through with it, right?
Let's first break down his training. And so I give you guys, get the whole group, a kind of framing on how we approach training. And this is just so different than everybody else. You guys, if you're here, you probably know this already. But so when most people aspire for progress, they aspire for muscle building, they automatically go to the lever of, I'm going to work harder. And I can guarantee you that every single person on this call, including all of our coaches, and Steve will tell you, have an enormous opportunity to progress, just never having to work harder, just simply working smarter. And so the first phase of muscle building that just everyone misses is what I call phase one. And it's like, first, we have to master a small number of skills. If I ask you to play tennis, if I ask you to play golf, you wouldn't expect to be perfect on your first day. You would give yourself a relatively normal time horizon, maybe 6 months, 12 months, in order to establish the skill. And so if let's say you currently play golf, and I was like, okay, well, let's teach you how to swing the other direction. We're going to swing the other way. You're like, what? Yeah, well, it's a whole new skill. And exercise is a skill. And most people have this false belief that they're good, and you're not. And good is obviously a continuing, is a sliding scale. But I hope all of you as growth-minded men see the opportunity within what you're doing to be like, hey, I probably, and this is harsh but true, you're probably a 3 out of 10, right? And that's not an attempt to break anybody down. It's an attempt to go, okay, great. There's an enormous amount of opportunity in front of me. So we just assume that right off the bat, we're a 3 out of 10 in our ability to execute. What would 10 out of 10 look like, right? And so you may not even want to get to 10 out of 10, but 10 out of 10, what does 10 out of 10 look like for you? And remember, you're not me, and you're not Steve, and you're not Michael. You're certainly not Johnny. And so you're not the coaches, but for your body, right? What does 10 out of 10 look like for your body? And like, what are the principles of 10 out of 10 execution, right? What does that look like? What do the principles look like? Well, I'll tell you the first foundational principle is structural balance. And so what is structural balance? Interchangeably used with the word posture, right? People hear posture. Most people hear posture, they're like, pull their shoulders back and rib cage kind of flares up and they'll stick their butt out. They think, you know, back. Everyone thinks posture is back, and posture is not back. Posture is vertically stacked. Right. So one of the big mistakes people make it in posture or aligning their posture is they pull their shoulders back, stick their butt out. No, that's not posture, right? That's dysfunctional posture. So the first thing I want you guys to think of is every exercise you do from this day forward. Does everybody hear me okay? Is it pretty clear? Make sure I'm on the right microphone. Yep. Good. Everything you do from this day forward should always, I just won't say always, but let's say 9 times out of 10. Start from this position of optimal structural balance, which means my rib cage stacked over my pelvis and my head obviously stacked over my rib cage. And so if you were to look at someone from the side, you would see their ankle, their knee, their hip, their shoulder, and their ear is vertically aligned. That's a good start, right? And so if I dropped a line straight down the top of my head and went right through the middle of my body, it's going to be this perfect symmetrical balance front to back, left to right, and rotationally. And so while that isn't always the case, that's the desired starting point. So when we're making decisions as coaches, we're not just going, Chris needs more bench press, right? No, if you're working with, you know, amateurs and people who don't know what the hell they're doing, if Chris wants to build his chest, Chris needs to do more bench press. We're looking at how do we make effective decisions to move him closer in the direction of structural balance? And then, so I should say that influences how much volume and how much frequency we do for this body part. And then once we've established some semblance of structural balance and connection to the body and the ability to move from a position of structural balance, then we can start doing things harder, right? Then we start looking at like, okay, well, now let's add some more resistance on top of this thing because you're already doing it well. So most coaches, if you go into a coaching system and you have a timeline, you have a time horizon, you're like, hey, it's 12 weeks, we've got 12 weeks. Then there's no time for, we got to spend the next 3 months improving your structure balance. And that's okay, right? Some people are like, listen, man, I don't care about how I feel in 5 years. I just want to look and feel my best 12 weeks from now. And that's okay. But for most of you guys that are here, my encouragement to you is there can be both. There can be really fast progress and this desire to move really well. Okay, so what we call moving towards structural balance. And it really comes down to two things. It comes down to the exercises we select and the way we do them, right? And this is maybe the missing piece for, you know, I call the missing link in everyone's exercise. It's not just about how many reps. What's the first question everyone asks you when it comes to if they want to build a chest? How many sets should I do, bro? Well, you know, like what exercises? Like, well, you're doing them wrong. It doesn't matter which ones you're doing if they all stink. So we want to make sure that first we're choosing the right exercises for your body. And second, we're doing them really, really well. And so your body means, I'll tell you what, I tell the story a lot, but I tried for 5 years, six to build my back, seven to build my back. And I worked as hard as I possibly could. And I would look like a swimmer. And then it's because I was choosing exercises that fit everyone else and not me. And so what I want you guys to start paying attention to is if there's a body part or some aspect of your body that isn't developing well, The solution is not more. The solution is not harder. The first solution or the first intervention is move well. Well, the first intervention is to start doing something, right? That's before moving well. But the next intervention that everyone just misses is do it well. And we spend an inordinate amount of time teaching people to do things well. Steve, give me some feedback on your client and what you guys did as far as improving his execution.
Yeah, you mentioned actually in the beginning, just like how he was stacked. He had some pelvic alignment issues. He had a hard time centering himself. So how he'd arrange his center of mass when he was descending in positions like squats. And, you know, it's pretty evidently aware that that's also his body, long legged kind of individual. Right. And then just obviously like hit the positions that he was choosing in his own training were positions that he felt strong with because they moved weight. Right. So it's just getting him to explore ranges and getting him to, like, especially with his lower body motions, how to get into discomfort, especially with like, hey, we're going to learn how to close your knee. We're going to learn how to keep your center of mass. We're going to learn how to, you know, move the hips vertically, how to move the hips horizontally. We're going to learn how to brace. A lot of these things were like the forefront, like that was the foundation. It's like, let's just set that, like you're saying about alignment. Like it was a big thoracolumbar alignment. It was a big focus.
So just, I want to bring that back and explain what he's saying there for some of you guys that may not understand. So if I put, let's say for any one of you guys, if I put 400 pounds on a squat bar, I say, get under it and lift it. Your body, no matter what you're thinking about, is going to default to its strongest position, right? Your body goes, whatever my best position to move is, wherever I have the greatest chance to move this, that's where my body will move to. And that's what we call a position of strength. Your body always, when you exceed what the body can do in the moment, the body will move into a position of strength. And so a position of strength is not always the best position to be in, right? If the goal is building muscle, the current momentary position of strength may actually not be the best way for you to train, except instead, it may be more useful for you to move toward positions of weakness. Now, this is why most people, when they start with their training, like, oh man, Ben advocates training light. I'm like, no, I don't. I advocate training your weaknesses, learning how to do things correctly first, and then your strength accelerates really fast. And this is where the missing link is, right? And so let's say right now you could bench press 225 pounds and I'm like, okay, or 200, whatever, 100 pounds. And I'm like, okay, well, instead of doing it that way, let's try it this way. So if you could do 225, inevitably your body's going, this is a really strong position for me. So if I adjust your balance, if I adjust your posture or your what we call your setup, then, and I put you in a position of an optimized position, which in this case for most people would be a position of weakness. All of a sudden you're like, oh, I can't use the same amount of weight. So psychologically, you're like, well, I'm not doing as much work. But the reality is the question at hand is not how much work am I doing? It's how much work is my pec doing, or in this case, or the muscle I'm trying to train doing, right? So because I have more weight on the bar doesn't mean that equates to more load or more tension or more torque through the muscle we're trying to train. And that's the missing piece. And so I tell you all of this stuff and we share all this stuff with you, not to sell you on it, but there's a few reasons. One, I want you to realize that you're capable of so much more than you realize. Two, it takes a lot of intentionality. It takes a lot of awareness, a lot of presence, and not necessarily as much effort as you think. Effort, for sure, 1,000% becomes a part of the equation at some point. For sure, it has to be. But effort is not useful until you're first doing it well. I mean, it's useful, but it's not maximally useful, right? And we want to make sure that you're learning how to use the steering wheel before we teach you how to use the gas pedal. Right. So let's teach you how to drive this car before we can really put your foot down on the accelerator. Okay. So that's the reason I tell you guys that. And the missing link for everyone is the one word that I said there, and I'll repeat it again. It's intentionality, right? It's first awareness, becoming aware and present in the moment. And second, being intentional with the way I move and ultimately with the way I contract my muscle. So here's a sound bite. People like sound bites. Mindfully contract muscle against resistance. There's a soundbite. I want you to mindfully use your brain to contract muscle against resistance. Now, what that sounds like is top-down motor control, meaning my brain tells my body what to do, right? Upper motor neurons from my brain tell the lower motor neurons of my muscles what to do. And that's really what's happening. It's you know, you hear of the mind-muscle connection. It's like I'm actually telling my body to contract. Anyone who's been to our camps or seen any videos online, you'll know what this is like. it's really new. It's really different. It's very challenging to actually challenge your muscles. Most people just mindlessly do stuff. So Brian, I see you walking on your treadmill there, man. And what if we could turn that walk, I don't know if you can hear me, hopefully you can. What if we could turn that walk into an exercise in mindfulness, right? And so what does that mean? It's funny, I do this with everyone really. But like walking, stepmill, bicycle, what if you could turn it into something that's incredibly intentional? So I want you, Brian, as you're walking, pay attention to the way your foot hits the floor. And then maybe the way you push off your big toe as you stride through. And then maybe you slow your breathing down a little bit, breathe deeply down into your belly and your diaphragm. And like you turn anything you do, including sitting, walking, breathing, anything, into an exercise and an opportunity to be present and mindful. So here's what the benefit of that becomes. One, you become exponentially more effective at doing the thing you want to do. Two, you get out of your head. How many of you guys have ever experienced being in your head and not being able to like slow down your thinking? Yeah. Like, get me out of this damn thing. Right. Guess where you can't be when you're present in your body? You're present in your body, right? You can't be in your head. Right. So we all have the ability to be consciously present in two places at once, right? Everyone says one, but it's actually two. So I can be conscious inside my body and I can be conscious outside of my body at the same time. But most people exist in the head, but they're in the future and they're in the past. Right. I want to be in the now and I want to be inside my body and outside my body. Right. So like, and how do I perceive the inside and the outside of my body? It's through my five senses, right? I perceive my world through my five senses. So learn to become acutely aware of your five senses. Now, I know this doesn't sound like it's related to muscle building, but here's a true fact. The thing that's changed my ability to build muscle and millions of people around the world more than anything is the ability to be present with what you're doing. So if you guys have trained with me, you know that like there's a lot of intentionality. There's a lot of presence. And so I encourage you guys, if you really want to accelerate your growth, stop doing shit mindlessly because it's easy or for expedience or simply to get reps done. Stop. You're wasting your time. Is it useful? Sure. Right. But how many, I use this metaphor a lot too, but how many of you guys read a book a week? Anybody on here read a book a week? Right. How many of you get to the end of the book and actually remember what you read? So is the goal to read a book a week or is the goal to actually get something out of the book? Right. And that's the, yeah. Well, you get to the end, you're like, what the hell did I just read? And that's how most people exercise. Most people go to the gym to say they exercise, not to actually get to the end of the exercise and go, yeah, I got something out of this. And I encourage this community of men to change that. Like, listen, when I read a book, I actually get something out of it. I don't rush through it. I think about it. I'm intentional. I'm present with it. It's not the act of reading that's the win. It's the knowledge or the person you become in the process, right? And it's the same with exercise. It's not the act of completing the workout that's the win, right? If you're someone who's very lazy and sedentary, then just the act of the workout is the win. But no one on this call is saying, just getting off the couch is hard for me, right? You guys are all past that. And now the next level of progress is, well, I got to do this thing really well. Okay. So I won't harp on that too much, but I encourage you guys to start thinking about, like, even if you're sitting there in the chair, what does it feel like to just bring my awareness to my butt against the seat? My feet against the floor. Maybe the way my breathing is encouraging my abdomen to rise and fall. And so why is that useful when I get into the gym? Well, how many of you guys have ever really slowed down to pay attention to when you're squatting or bench pressing? Everybody remember this, pay attention. What muscle is actually doing the work? And if you can't feel the muscle you're training, guess what? It's not actually doing the work, right? So your body's going to distribute tension. So why do I want to pay attention to like why I'm breathing? Because it's very correlated with, if I ask you to slow down on a squat or a bench press or whatever, oh, the thing I'm trying to work is actually working, or maybe it's not, right? So I want you guys to get your head around that. Presence and mindfulness is not only the hardest part of your workout, but the most beneficial, where the single greatest opportunity lies to change your life. And all of you guys want to come here to look better, but I guarantee the path to looking better, no matter what it is presence and intentionality. How many of you guys mindlessly eat? Or raise your hand if you've mindlessly eaten something in the last 30 days? Right. What happens if when you become present and you become conscious of like what you're feeling in your body and maybe what you're thinking, what you're experiencing in that moment. You're like, oh, I'm experiencing this. This isn't a trigger to mindlessly eat something. It's just maybe like a little bit of fear. What's mindless eating, Dom? Do you ever like sit on the couch? You probably don't do it anymore, but I'm sure you've done it in your life. You ever like sit on the couch, just like eat, or like walk in the kitchen, grab something that's on the couch or on the counter, eat it, or just like walking by a store and you're not supposed to eat. You're not really hungry. You just kind of eat something. It's you're not thinking about it. You just kind of like throw something in. Yeah. And so people do like, oh, I'm bored. Have you ever eat because you're bored? Right. Very common. So the cure to mindless eating is awareness. Just like, just become present, man. If you become present in how you feel and you realize you can change it, right? We all eat overeat as a response or drink or whatever the escape is. We all do it to escape or to change the way we feel. I call it a plus one, right? We just want to feel 1% better than we do now. And if I can choose something that'll make me feel 1% better than I do now, instantaneously, most people will choose it. Because they don't have a purpose or a mission. If you have a driving purpose and a mission that's bigger than you, there's no reason for that plus one. You're like, oh, I'm going for that big thing. It's a purpose that's bigger than myself. But if you don't, and you're just kind of living minute to minute, then it's very easy to become mindless and falter. And it'll stop talking. Stevie, anything you want to add about Alex's transformation? Let's talk about his nutrition. What do you guys do nutritionally to fix his gut?
Yeah. So in the beginning, it was honestly, it was some simple, let's just remove it. Cause like self-admittedly, he ate like a bro. So like after a workout, it was Wendy's and stuff like that. So we had to get rid of some of that, but it was, he was such a pleasant guy to work with. He was like, yeah, I got to cut it. So we did. He's been a great advocate of digestive enzymes. They really helped him. We got on some fermented foods. He was a soldier with all that. And he eats clean. He was completely open to just eating very whole food based diet. And so it wasn't a big sell. He just understood it because when he knew that, like, knowing his goal was gaining, I was talking to him about calories and about how, if we're going to get there, you know, especially being like a natural guy, food's going to be the biggest thing, but not only food, but getting the food to absorb and assimilate. Right. So knowing that that's the biggest lever we have to eventually pull, then if we don't conquer this now, then you're not going to be in a very happy place in 2-3 months. Right. And then he was like, okay, so what do I got to do? I'm like, we got to start eating clean so we can get your nutrition as high as possible. And then, you know, that way we can, you know, start leaning on different things later should we have to, but start there. And so he was sold on it. He just had no problem with that.
What made him a great client? What makes him a great client?
The beginner mindset, just the whole, especially considering that he wasn't new.
Tell me what that means.
Just the willingness to walk in the door and be like, I've started, but I don't know anything. I'm Clay. Just do your thing. And then I'm just
tell me what, like one or two things that you would have done to him that he was responsive to. Cause like, I want to make sure that everyone understands how ultimately to get that level of result.
Yeah. So in his programming, it was like you had mentioned before, but how, you know, when you're in this position, you kind of have to break that gap between lifting light and like lifting with intentionality. That was hard for him because it was like he had to really, really humble himself because he's not a weak guy by any means. Like if you put this guy into a position where it's just like, hey man, just go throw this weight around, he could probably squat 300 to 400. But then the way I was getting him to do it, he was like, I can't even do a goblet squat without turning it into like I'm a stripper, right? Where he's bending right over and then good morning or something. So that was really humbling for him. So he did amazing there. So on this training front, that would be it. And then in terms of like his diet, again, it was just being willing to take the slow approach. In the very beginning, we did bring him into a small deficit so I could see if he was responsive. And he did respond. If you actually go back into my true coach, you can actually see it's pretty cool. His weight is like down and then it goes, and it's just progressively increasing or, you know, hugely responsive. And that was exactly the point. It's like, let's see what's going on here. And he's just responsive. He just was like, okay, just tell me what to do and we're going to do it. And he's gone through a lot of life things with his family, and he was just communicative. Like, this is what we're dealing with. This is the issue. What's the runaround? What can we do?
He would always. So would you say self-awareness was a part of his success?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it was the ability to at least open up to whether or not he was self-aware. You know what I mean? It's like, let's talk about this. I don't know if this means anything, because sometimes it didn't, sometimes it did, but it was just, hey, let's open up a line of dialogue here so we can talk about it.
Nice. All right, guys. So if anyone has questions on that, you guys can drop them in the chat. I'm going to shift gears quickly because I want to, what's his body fat? Was Lewis's question, Stevie?
I wouldn't put him above 16. That would be a stretch. I would say 14 to 16.
All right. So I'm going to shift gears here because I want to keep everyone engaged. We're going to talk about cold and heat exposure. I've been blessed to interview some of the best researchers in the world, some of the top researchers talking about what actually is the protocol. And I thought a lot of you guys are interested. So if you're not aware of the kind of current massive craze around cold exposure, saunas, it's massive right now. There's a lot of people doing deliberate cold exposure through submersion into cold water or showers, even cryo saunas, which is like a cryo closet almost, like where they just kind of go into this really cold room. As far as efficacy, you know, you have cold submersion at the top. I would say the cryo saunas be second, and third would be the showers. Although, and mechanistically, we can talk about what's actually happening. But so one thing we know we're doing immediately, as soon as we expose our skin to any cold water, even as little as a cold shower, we actually get an adrenaline response, right? Noradrenaline specifically. And that can actually increase the production of brown fat. And if you don't know what brown fat is this metabolically active tissue that actually has been shown to burn more calories in the body. So the more brown fat you have, the more effectively you burn calories, the more effectively you actually regulate blood sugar. So brown fat has this huge benefit of being metabolically active tissue, almost like muscle, right? When you think of muscle, it's this metabolic active tissue, whereas I move, this muscle actually burns through more calories. Well, brown fat actually does it just all the time. It's just constantly burning through calories. And so to increase brown fat in the body is very, very desirable. And so cold exposure, anything ultimately that increases adrenaline can increase brown fat, but cold exposure has this unique benefit of doing it rapidly because what you don't notice and what sometimes you do and sometimes you don't is you induce a shivering. And that shivering can actually is mechanistically going to heat up the body and increase the amount of caloric burn. So that's correlated with obviously increased metabolic effectiveness, metabolic efficiency. Now, people say, well, should everyone do cold exposure? And obviously the answer is, of course, no. If someone has heart conditions or low blood pressure, there could be a big problem because when you're going high or potentially low blood pressure, high blood pressure, I think you're fine. Low blood pressure, there's always the potential for you to pass out, right? There's always a potential for you, especially in water. So always make sure you're safe. Be very, very cautious about where you're doing it and who you're doing it with. And safety is a really big concern because people get into this mindset of being competitive with it, right? So when you submerge yourself, by the way, it doesn't need to be really cold. They actually show relatively similar benefits so far with 60 degree, I think it's actually 56 or 60 degree water as 32 degree water. And those are, if you've ever been in cold water, there's a really big difference between 56 and 32 degrees. But apparently as far as the benefits, not that different. Because if you think of the mechanism here at play, you're basically just subjecting your body to a stress, right? And stresses are measured in kind of two dimensions. It's measured in amplitude and duration, right? So you can seemingly equate, if I just increase the duration of the less cold one, it can equate to the same amount of stress as a short duration of the high amplitude one, if that makes sense. So amplitude is like height. And then obviously if it's a huge amplitude of stress, it's going to be short, whereas duration is going to be long and not quite so steep. So when we're thinking about cold exposure, we're actually just looking at what she says is about 11 minutes a week total. So 10 to 12 minutes a week of total cold, exposure. And the suggestion is spaced over two or three bouts. So not at once. You don't want to do all 11 minutes at one time, but 2 to 3 times a week, if you can, get in the cold and get a total of 11 minutes to initiate this brown fat production. Now, it's probably true that more is better acutely. Now, when I say more, not necessarily more at once, but more frequently acutely. But here's what happens the more often you do it. Your body adapts really quickly. So if you do it every single day for like 7 to 14 days, the brown fat adaptation actually slows down. So if you're looking for a really fast metabolic shift, doing it really, really frequently in the first 1 to 2 weeks is beneficial, but then your long-term progress will slow. So if you're someone who just can get in it 2 to 3 times a week forever, then long-term, that's probably a better solution. Hopefully that makes sense. Biochemically, so from a chemical perspective, we're going to decrease these pro-inflammatory cytokines significantly, like massively. And you don't need to submerge your head, although I think I actually like submersing my head. You don't need to, because it's a systemic benefit, right? If you just submerge to your neck, you get the systemic benefit of all these, cytokines, pro-inflammatory cytokines being blunted. So it drops this inflammation, and like significantly, right? I think it's on the order of 40% acute drop of inflammation, which is pretty remarkable, right? Dropping 40% is very remarkable. Now, so some of the benefits I've personally seen from frequent cold exposure, I go probably 5 times a week, four to five times a week into the cold plunge. Some of the benefits I see, if I do it consistently, my body fat falls off. It's just very quick. Like daily almost, and almost to the point that I actually intentionally increase my food. Systemic inflammation decreases, joint pain goes away. Here's maybe the single greatest benefit. And the reason I do it, I actually do it at the end of my day most days, because I like to do a lot. I like to push hard. I'm busy. I'm working hard. I'm training hard. I get a lot on my plate. And for me to really disconnect at the end of the day and get great sleep allows me to do it again the next day. So by sauna and cold plunge almost every night, my sleep is massively increased. And I get this really great. So if you've ever been to cold plunge, you know what I'm talking about. There's no such thing as having a racing mind in a cold plunge. It's impossible. Why? Because your brain goes, I'm going to fucking die. Your brain's going, get me out of this thing. And you have to calm your mind. On top of the fact you're getting all this positive neuroendocrine response. So you're getting anandamide and oxytocin and dopamine, all these really great feel-good neurotransmitters being released into your brain. So you just feel awesome when you get up. So it is absolutely physiologically addictive, and it's been shown to heal the brain from a regenerative perspective. So that's cold. Sauna. Now, I want you to categorize these as separate, right? Some people just automatically bunch them together. You don't have to bunch cold and hot together. They're separate, right? You can do just cold and you can do just warm. I wouldn't do just cold before bed, because you can definitely disrupt your sleep. But you can definitely do it anytime earlier in the day. I actually think there may be some value in doing it pre-workout. And mechanistically, I could share if you guys care why, but I think pre-workout might be a really good time to do it. And then saunas, we're looking at something very different. The benefit in sauna is actually seemingly mostly from a cardiovascular perspective, right? So the cold has a benefit of regulating autonomic nervous system and your inflammation. The sauna seems to be really beneficial from a cardiovascular perspective to improve the robustness of your heart, of your blood vessels. You're getting something called heat shock proteins, which actually causes this, what's called a... Why am I drawing a blank on the name? It's called a... It'll come to me in a minute. Basically like an acute stressor to the cell, to every cell in your body when you heat it up. And that actually can cause rejuvenation and regeneration of the cell. So benefit of warm is, you know, same idea. It's acute stressors that cause the body at the level of the DNA to start adapting and being more effective. So some of the benefits of sauna, as I say, are cellular rejuvenation, cardiovascular benefits, detoxification, improving blood pressure, decreasing muscle tension and tone. Probably a lot more that I'm missing, but that gives you kind of a general idea. And so sauna is a way better idea at night or post-workout, whereas cold you want early in the day or pre-workout. So sauna, because of the increase in body temperature, as soon as you get out, the body immediately starts cooling itself. So if I'm in a hot temperature, the body naturally starts cooling itself through sweat and starts dialing down the nervous system, right? So if I'm hot, the body goes, I don't want to be hot anymore. So it releases tension because tension is holding heat, right? So the body goes, I'm going to relax. That's a really good way to prepare yourself for sleep. So sauna late at night is a good idea. Now here's a winning protocol. A little bit of cold before bed, interchangeably with sauna, is a very good idea. Very, very, very useful. Small amount of cold. You can do 30-second bouts with extended periods in the sauna will massively improve your quality of sleep, massively. So I would not finish on cold. I would finish on hot if it's at night. If it's during the day and you want to increase fat burning, you actually want to finish on cold. So fat burning, finish on cold, sleep, finish on hot. Got it? Total amount of sauna suggested per week is 60 minutes. Not a lot. It doesn't have to be that hot. 60 to 70 minutes. And actually said 80 degrees Celsius or 176 degrees Fahrenheit is where the research is done. Now, I think that's bullshit, if I'm being honest. Like, I've been in a 176 degree sauna and it feels like I'm in like a Florida summer. It's not that hot. Actually, I think a Florida summer might be hotter. So I think the research is still new on this, but I think you go in as hot as you comfortably can without having to, you know, like for the duration you're looking to do, right? It doesn't have to be comfortable. It can be slightly uncomfortable, but I think sometimes people push the level to an unnecessary level, right? It's probably not necessary to go to 220 degrees, but maybe another one of these amplitude versus duration circumstances. Dominic's asking, for starting, what do you think about decreased temperature on each time I take a shower to meet a very cool temperature, for example, start at 75? Dom, to be honest, it's probably a waste of your time. Like slowly decreasing the temperature, man, you just got to get in the cold. I know it sucks, but like just get in the cold. It's not as hard as you think, and you'll adapt way faster than you think. Slowly decreasing is just, it's not going to make it any easier when it gets cold. I think that's a simple way to think of it. Like if you're going to put it as cold as it'll go, slowly decreasing your way down doesn't make it any easier once you get there. Just tear off the band-aid. No, Scott, you didn't waste your money. Scott's asking if you think infrared is a better idea. No. So the cool thing with infrared, because they're smaller, there's actually, because it's also a different wavelength, it's reported to actually warm you from the inside rather than the outside, which is a little bit of, it's almost like a microwave, right? It cooks you from the inside out. I think you still have the same amount of benefit. I'm confident you still have the same amount of benefit. It's slightly different, but I think you're good with an infrared sauna. And now if you have the opportunity to get into a conventional Swedish or Finnish sauna, then do it. But I think it's definitely not a waste of money. I would still definitely do it. You may just have to do it a little bit longer, right? Whereas in a conventional sauna, 60 minutes a week is enough. And in the infrared, you may want to do 60 minutes 2 to 3 times a week or 40 minutes multiple times a week. I have an infrared buddy and I used it for years. I still have it and I like it. Yeah. Is it advised to do showers and saunas on an empty stomach, or does it not matter? That's a good question, Sunil. Saunas, I always advise empty stomach, as empty as possible. Cold plunge, I don't think it makes a difference. That's not true. It may actually make a difference. So I've never heard anybody talk about it, but if you just logic your way through it, you're creating a huge amount of stress. It's basically going to shut down digestion. So you probably wouldn't want to do it with a big, big bolus of food in your stomach, right? So you think of what happens when I go in a cold, but your body releases adrenaline, everything goes, oh, your muscles just constrict, your blood pressure shoots up, right? And the body shuts down digestion because the body's trying to get blood into the limbs. So it's shunting blood to the stomach, sending it to the limbs to try to like warm you up. So I would say it's probably going to shut that digestion pretty hard. Lewis asking about red light therapy. Man, I'm a massive fan of red light therapy. It's actually not red light, but like I got my sweet little helmet here thing that I wear and shine this light on my brain. Wear this thing to decrease any brain inflammation I have. You can even shine a thing up your nose. I'm a big fan of red light. Shine it on your head, shine it on your body, decreases inflammation, improves energy production at the level of the mitochondria. Any questions on that? Stevie, how was your experience in the sauna? Was that the first time you did it when you were here?
Sauna or a cold?
Or a cold plunge.
Yeah, it's the first time I did that. I've been doing cold showers for a year, but just to test of what you're just saying with the whole rip the band-aid off, it doesn't help at all. Like the doing the cold plunge was like, you just have to just jump in because no matter how many times I did cold showers here, like literally every single morning for 5 to 10 minutes, nothing. And I was like, I was ruined. It was awesome though. It was great. I'm not sure if I was, I don't think I was honestly in there long enough to get a much of a benefit from it. The benefit was purely psychological.
Yeah, and that's true though. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But the thing with cold in my experience is the benefit isn't from one time. Like you shouldn't feel like, I mean, do you go to shiver? I'll go till I shiver every time, but it's not like a massive amount of shiver. I'm like, actually the last time I went in, I was an idiot. What is today? Monday, Saturday night. I went into the 9 p.m. Sauna and cold plunge. And I went into it was basically ice. And I'm like, I'm just going to stay until I feel like I want to get out. And so if you guys anyone ever really push it in the cold plunge, I'm going to tell you how this goes. Oh, okay, sweet. So Chris, you'll get this. So at first you get in and your brain goes, get me the fuck out of here. You know, like, oh, shut up. You stay in. Then you get to like 2-3 minutes. It's like, oh, this is easy. I can stay in here forever. And then you get past that 2-3 minutes, you start to get like 4 or 5 minutes. And it almost feels like you're warming up. You're like, oh, I feel like I'm getting warm. And then I start moving, right? So like moving makes it really, really cold, but I still feel like I'm pretty warm. I'm pretty good. And when you start getting that warm, then I think it's just your body releasing copious amounts of adrenaline. Once you get past that feeling of warm and you start to get really cold again, that's a different level of cold. Like the cold you feel when you first get in, you're like, this is uncomfortable, but I can deal with this. The second, what I call like the second round of cold, that's a cold that feels like your bones are about to break. You're shivering from the inside out. It's a different level of cold. And I got there and I was like, oh, this is, I forgot about this guy. Like this is an old friend. And I stayed there and I got out and I was shivering so uncontrollably. I couldn't stand up. I had to sit down. This is 3 days ago. I was like, I need to sit down. I was really bad. So don't go to that point. Don't be an idiot. But that was my experience. Chris is asking, have you heard anything about cold exposure potentially slowing down the hypertrophy response? Yeah, for sure, Chris. So there's a bunch of people jumping on the bandwagon now saying that because in exercise, we're intentionally inducing inflammation, cold exposure within 4 hours after training will blunt the interleukin response, right? So we get a bunch of interleukins that come out, like these myokines, these pro-inflammatory molecules that are beneficial to the adaptation of exercise. So we will definitely blunt the exercise adaptation response. So a way to think of it is like, if I'm a pro athlete and I got to play again tomorrow, I'm not so worried about adapting. I just want to be optimized. I want to, so I can get in a cold plunge right away. But if I'm someone who wants to adapt to this training stimulus, then you got to not do it. You can do a sauna after you train, but I wouldn't do cold. Chris, you ever got to that point where we're like ridiculous, like shivering so uncontrollably? I literally couldn't stand up.
Yeah, actually, literally the last time I went to the spa, I was getting dizzy coming out, and I think a lot of the people thought I'd been drinking because I was like, I basically had to stumble, and I did that a couple of times, and when I ended up driving home, and I normally run really hot, but I had to actually turn the heat on in the vehicle, and I was so chilled that like I was chilled to the bone. It was almost like, you know, like I do a lot of hunting in the winter, and when you come home from spending a night, a day sitting in the bush, it's the exact same feeling I was just. And that was just from about, I think it was about, yeah, probably four minutes in the cold. But I did it about 4 or 5 times. After each sauna bout, I went right in.
Yeah.
I'd never caught a chill like that before. It was to the point where it was like it's the first time it like really, really sucked. And I was like, why do I do that? But it's, like, you know.
You're just on the brink of panic. You're like, am I going to be okay? I'm like, yeah, you'll be all right.
Yeah. But I was like, I had to stumble out. I thought people were like, what's this guy doing? But
it was, yeah, totally. So luckily I go there almost every day to the sauna. So the girls all know me and they're like, oh, just spend being a man. Yeah. Questions, gents? Is there questions that are unrelated to those two topics today? Is there any challenges you guys are experiencing? Any wins you guys want to share? So we like always idea of sharing challenges, sharing wins. Michael Maris, tell me a story. You're always entertaining.
I didn't come prepared now. I don't even know what to say. Tell you a story. That's a very
How are you clients doing?
Give me a direction.
Anything going on with yourself, with your clients? What's new?
With myself, I think I was telling you about more of a dad thing, but coaching the fall season here for my oldest, who's six. So we got soccer practice tonight, and it's Ted Lasso season. So I'm driving those little six-year-olds hard, full conditioning tonight. We're gonna get them moving fast, get them moving strong. So that'll be fun. That's what's new and exciting in my world, and just getting a lot of exposure to some different things. So hockey's coming soon. Next month, he starts hockey.
Dude, there's nothing better. I used to coach my kids when they were little men. There's nothing better than those little rugrats like running around. It's the best.
Man, I really love it. We had a game this past Saturday, and just the evolution even from last year to this year, and just seeing the confidence in the kids and the development in the kids and the camaraderie and just kind of being out there with them. It's super rewarding. It's a lot of fun. More fun than I thought it was going to be.
Totally. Yeah. That's awesome. Gents, if there's no other questions, I'll let you guys get back to your Wednesday night. Go enjoy it. I'm going to go get in the sauna and the cold plunge. Hopefully we'll provide some value for you guys this week. Gave you a little perspective on stuff. If there's any specific topics that you guys want us to cover on these calls, please just drop me a message, send us a message in the Telegram group or message your coach directly. We'll make sure we cover literally anything you guys want, right? Training, nutrition, lifestyle, mindset, stress, hormones, all of it, sleep. Whatever you guys need to, so Jay, do you want me to answer that? Why don't you just jump on with Mats and talk about it, man? Like, so everyone's different, Jay. So Jay's asking specifically what happens after 90 days. So everyone's different, man. So it depends where you get relative to your goal. You know, 90 days is often a foundational layer. So it's like teaching you the skills, the habits, and the capabilities to be able to do it for the rest of your life. That's kind of the goal, right? It's like, what's it going to look like for Jay to, learn to play the instrument, right? So it's like you're doing this intensive of exercise mastery, of digestion optimization, of sleep optimization, creating the habits. So you're like, hey, where am I now after 90 days? Have I established what I need to do? Have I built enough skill and enough capability to do it for the rest of my life on my own? Or do I want some more? Or do I want to just continue to work with you guys on a programming and nutrition basis? And so there's different options after that. So if you want to connect with Mats, just have a chat about it, man. He can put together a custom plan for you. It all depends where you are and where you think you're going to be. Do you have any questions, Jay? Or are you good? That's it. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you, man. All right, gents, go enjoy your day. I'm gonna go get cold.